I think he's trying to focus on the importance of the transforming power of the gospel. And he's recognizing and saying the challenge that we often bring that gospel out of our own culture, thinking that often the culture itself becomes kind of it can be elevated too much, the cultural component. And it's certainly not always easy to separate what is specific culture and what is Jesus's presence in the gospel itself. But I think that's a challenge that we have to find sometimes, is how to separate what is small T tradition, what is our own expressions and culturally, and to be willing to embrace the otherness of a very different culture. I think this is much more complicated than often people think at the start, or wish it were more simple. I'll give you some examples. When missionaries first came to the northern peoples and the Dene people, one of them was talking to them about the Ten Commandments. And so he had a group of elders, and he was explaining the Ten Commandments, and then he asked the elders, I want you to talk among yourselves and to decide which is the biggest sin. For you and your people in your context, what would be the biggest sin? And so the elders talked with themselves for a bit, and then they came back and they said, Father, for us the biggest sin is to lock our door. And the priest was, I'm not in a place that I'm used to. But in the north, because of the harsh climate, people coming in out of the cold, a locked door can mean death. And so hospitality, sharing, those are essentials in the starkness and the fierceness of our winters. I'll just give another example of culturally how the otherness, the missionary really has to be open to the otherness. I was listening to the Cree translation of the Mass, and they were doing the Lamb of God prayer. And I was listening to how they're saying the Lamb of God, and I was asking, what does that really mean? And so when they were saying Lamb, they were saying in Cree, little ugly caribou. And so you go back and you realize that when the first missionaries were coming and he was visiting with the elder and he'd show him a picture of a lamb, and the elder from his background and culture, his only expression of it would be a little ugly caribou. And so then that becomes part of the translation in our masses. And it just gives you an understanding of how challenging it is to move between these cultures at times. And yet, the essentials of who Jesus is, our relationship with God the Father and the power of the Spirit, those things get communicated. But how they're expressed is so much affected by the culture.
Archbishop Chatelain, these are wonderful examples from your lived experience as the Archbishop of Kewatin-Lipa in Canada, where there's a significant population of Indigenous people, and they demonstrate clearly how we have a European Christian culture meeting another culture, in this case Indigenous, but it could be any other culture. How are we to understand what enculturation is exactly? For example, in this year's a message for the Day of Prayer in Solidarity with Indigenous People in Canada, the message features a man, Etse Eya, who's described as displaying a healthy melding of Dene and Catholic spirituality. Is this what we mean by enculturation? Is it a melding of two ways of life? How can we understand enculturation?
Well, I think, as I mentioned before, that it is not just a simple or easy process, and that people often spend, I think, a lot of their lives trying to find the nuances of how to have both in a healthy way. I think the bottom line is recognizing that there is elements of sanctification and God's presence in both cultures that are expressing or trying to come to grips with the gospel. And so knowing that there's elements of positive from both sides, there's also blind spots in both cultures. I think of it sometimes as, thinking of it as people, that cultures are like people, and they have great strengths and gifts. They also have blind spots and places they don't see. And so there's no perfect culture, but it's very much the eyes and ears and the hands that we see and hear and feel things through. But it's valuing the culture and different. I think that one of the ladies who I think was an expression of this was Elizabeth Mackenzie, a dog-ribbed matriarch in the Bechelkoi area of Northwest Territories. And she would exhort her people, she would say, to be strong like two people, one person, but strong like two people. That you have the European expression, you take the good parts of that, but you also keep the strong, good parts of the Bene background. And she would encourage and exhort them to try to find the way to have both of those present. That's not easy, but I think it is a richness when someone can be open to the positives of both.
Archbishop Chetlin, in your experience, how can an enculturated faith enrich the entire church?
I think that when we're open to other cultures expressing the gospel, it helps us to maybe see our own blind spots a bit and to have a bigger picture of what the gospel is, who Jesus is. As we say, no one has the complete picture. We need each other to see more facets of who God really is and his call to us. I think that some of that expression for me is in the way the Aboriginal people share, the generosity, the sharing. In the traditional way, an example is just gift-giving. I'll give an example. If someone comes up to you and says, oh, those are really beautiful mitts, I really like those mitts, you give them the mitts. You share that with them. If they would say, I really like the dogs that you have, it was a sharing of the dogs. And in their culture, you didn't ask for something that you didn't need. Don't ask for extra. You ask for something that you need, and then you share. You really give things away. I think that's something that speaks to our culture and the effects of materialism when capitalism is without any boundaries or guidance. Another expression of how the Aboriginal people would refer, they have different names for the Europeans, and one is the Totina Dene, the English people, but also Asia Dene. And what that means is the people who have things. And that early on, that was their expression of us, that we had many things. And some of that's okay, some of that is limiting. Again, in their cultural context, one of the biggest insults you can offer a person in the culture is a sia ghanitan, which means you love things. And that's a big insult. Or it's something that's saying things are out of order when you love things more than people. So this is just an expression of some of the culture and what it can offer, I think, to our expression of Catholic faith and our approach to materialism and things, that there can be helpful insights gained when we really understand a bit of another culture's perspective.
With all the things that there are to be gained by embracing or appreciating the expression of the Catholic faith in other cultures, why do you feel that there's still today a certain mistrust or a hesitancy, perhaps in some contexts, the desire to impose the Eurocentric or European expression of the Catholic faith, as opposed to allowing it to develop within a particular cultural context as per the local customs?
I think sometimes it's with goodwill, and that as a child and as a person, we grow up with a particular expression of the faith, and we fall in love with that, and then we want to share that with others, but then it's kind of a certain elements have been part of that in our own emotional attachment and the spiritual experience of it, and we tend to say this is the way. So that's always a temptation to say that my experience is the way. I think another part is sometimes in doing missionary work, some of the Aboriginal spiritual elements very easily are part of Catholic faith. There's no contradiction, quite very easily. So some elements are more of a question. Can this be compatible with Catholicism in a healthy way or not? And I think a real respect and dialogue needs to be around those elements to really unpack what is really meant by this tradition. What is it really expressing, and what elements of it are they compatible or not? There are also some elements of traditional Aboriginal spirituality that will never be compatible with Catholicism. And again, being able to identify that. So a lot of Catholics, I think, quickly react, and they see some of the elements that could never be part of the Catholic faith and kind of put a wall up. But I think that when we're secure enough in who we are and in our faith, that we can enter into dialogues with things and pull the elements that are not only compatible with our Catholic faith, but also are inspiring and help us to see things through a bit different eyes, and maybe give us a little new images of who God is when we're willing to do that in a good way.
Archbishop Chatlin, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I guess just that we're very encouraged by Pope Francis and his openness to the poor and to the other peoples. And I think this is expressed in the Evangelii Gaudium and his expression of the need to get beyond just the hallowing of our particular cultural traditions. And so it just, I think, gives us encouragement that we're moving in the right way, and that we continue to do that in a real spirit of respect, openness, and praying and faith.